She was a beautiful woman inside and out, and she just had these wonderful sparkling brown eyes, and she would look at you and take you in and be extremely present and an amazing listener, and you just felt like there was nothing going on in her life except you at that moment.
She led quite a life.
She was married first to my biological grandfather, Sam Sloan, and he started Duell, Sloan & Pierce, a publishing company, and they lived in Paris for a couple of years because he was sent over there to find French authors. And so she lived kind of a great Gatsby life, and she was kind of a beautiful sidekick in some ways, kind of Katharine Hepburn-like and gorgeous. And that was a challenge for her that she later really worked through in all of her writing, because I think Sam was 39 when he died, and then she married Nicholas Freidberg a couple of years later, and he too was a publisher, but somehow during that time she began to come more into her own, and she always had this struggle that she felt like she wasn't worth listening to and that she didn't have a brain. And here she was always surrounded by great literary people and lots of intelligence, and she felt like her role was the beauty, the gorgeous piece with these men. And yet that made her angrier and angrier as time went on. She was 107 when she died, so this was long before the feminist movements. And she began to write not until she was really in her 40s. And then she just felt like that was her way to get her voice out there, and she gained some confidence, and she had a tent set up outside of her house on Martha's Vineyard, and they moved there when they retired in their 50s, and every morning she would go out in this canvas tent, and she would write on a little yellow legal pad and type on an old-fashioned typewriter, and that's where she started to write her first novels. She wrote and wrote. She wrote a memoir. She wrote five novels and a memoir. Then it wasn't until she was 90, Nick, her husband, had died at that point, that she still had a lot to work out, but she didn't have enough left in her, she thought, to really do another novel. So she started writing poetry in her 90s, and then she wrote three volumes of poetry before she died, and then another little thing about Scotland as well. So she was really prolific, but what's fascinating is that here is a woman who was so beautiful and so bright, and yet all her life she really, really struggled with the sense that she didn't have anything worth sharing and that she didn't have a mind. And you'll see in all of her books this kind of, the characters are very autobiographical that way, and they struggle with sense of self and identity over and over again, and where do you fit into the world. And she was just fascinating to be with, because she was always thinking about deeper thoughts like that, about how did she fit in, and she was interested in psychology and her psychology and your psychology, and she just conveyed to you, even when I was a child, that you had something worth saying and you were worth being listened to. And she had that remarkable quality that carried not just with her grandchildren but clearly with many people around her, because so many people have spoken, particularly since she died, about how much of a treasure she was to them as well, and how she made them also feel worth something.
And her poetry has touched so many people in so many personal ways.
Well, I think it's very accessible poetry. It's simplified, but it speaks to a lot of common core with people, with where do you belong in the world, with the rushing of life by and the importance of just sitting down and looking and observing. She's very connected to nature, and I think that resonates with lots of people, that those same kinds of questions about where do I fit in this world, and what happens, particularly for folks who are older, if I'm alone, if my partner dies, where do I fit in? I think many of us ask that question all the time.
Tamara Sloan, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.